Hey, everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly. It's your friend, Rick, and today we have Marcelo Labre, who's the co-founder, president, and CTO at Remote. So for those of you that don't know, Remote is a global payroll, tax, HR, and compliance solution for distributed teams. They enable companies of all sizes to hire anyone, anywhere in the world. And the company's recent public valuation was more than $3 billion. It comes as this great confluence of events of HR tech being very hot, distributed payroll and embedded payroll are really top of mind for companies. And of course, this remote work from home distributed workforce that we have, just really part of this like global economy here. For some context for you all, Marcelo has spent his career as a product-oriented engineer, building products and scaling architectures and teams. Before Remote, he was previously vice president of engineering at Unbabel and CTO at many different companies and firms, including Faber Ventures in Portugal. So thanks for coming on the show, Marcelo.
Thank you.
So, I mean, with such a really great like operator entrepreneur background, I think our audience would be really interested in learning about kind of your career path, your career arc. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to try to skip the boring parts.
Okay. That's always good.
Anyway, I had a college, a computer science degree. I was a researcher in Internet of Things, sensor networks for a couple of years. My problem with research was that it was leading to nowhere. And it's a common problem in academia is that you're working, but it's hard to materialize because, you know, most stuff it gets, you know, put on the shelf. So anyway, I went to, into what used to be called industry, working for real companies, making real money. And I joined the big company in Portugal, big consulting company. And, you know, the first few months I thought, what a huge mistake. I'm no one in this company. No one knows my name. No one knows who I am. Doesn't matter how hard I work. And because, you know, it felt, you know, for second job, it felt kind of a bit too big. I felt like maybe I need something where I can actually learn, contribute, and grow rather than just be this one, you know, one number in a big spreadsheet. So I started sort of in the coming years going from bigger companies to smaller companies, making my way into smaller until I started my own stuff. I met my co-founder in 2012 and Job, who's today a CEO of my co-founder at Remote. And we started this, you know, job platform at the time. It's just nothing. We tried to get some investment and people were like, you just don't know anything. Just go home.
Oh, no.
Stop playing entrepreneur. We're crushed. But we kept going. And over the years, this was like 12 years ago or something. And we kept building stuff on the side. Some people, you know, you go play soccer with your friends or you have other activities, and we would build things on the side. I joined a couple of companies, started a couple, joined as CTO as well, and eventually fast forward a lot of stuff, a lot of companies and teams as growing up as an engineer, career ladder. Unbabel was a great company to work at, and I was very happy as well. But, you know, Job and I kept discussing, you know, when are we going to actually go back to building something we actually sell? Because we had built many different products across the years, but we never sold any because we had fun building things. But we would eventually just, you know, not have the gumption of trying to go for a sell. And they were very cool products that we actually built and used. But, you know, we were like, nah, we have our own career. So we're going to waste time on trying to, you know, follow through something that's not going to lead anywhere. Anyway, we got to a day where it was like, we know enough. We've met enough people. We've done enough things. We've built so many different teams, successful companies. When are we going to do our own thing? And then we started talking quite a lot about the things that we're passionate about. And Yo used to be a VP of product at GitLab. So coming off from the fully remote distributed world, what were the pains of, you know, building a company such as that from the scratch? And on my end, I was coming off from the other end, which was we're office-bound company and culture where hiring the best talent is not easy because you're in a country like Lisbon, in a country like Portugal and Lisbon, where at the time, you don't, it was like 6 years ago, or we started remote 4.5 years ago. So when I joined my last company, like 6-7 years, it was not easy because Lisbon was not what it is today in terms of, you know, reputation for entrepreneurship and being a bit of this tiny center of the world for a lot of different cultures and people to explore their company building ideas. And so it was hard. If I wanted access to the best talent in the world, I couldn't. And so the more we talked about what Ale does, the more I realized that we're meeting in the middle. And it was this, solving, you know, global employment. How do you help find people, pay people, manage people, get them what they deserve, and help to, you know, equalize and redistribute wealth across the world? Because even though talent is everywhere, opportunities are not. And so we wanted to bridge these, and thus we started remote in January 2019.
See, I love this, Marcelo. One of the things that you mentioned, that how many years did it take of just kicking around ideas before this took hold with remote?
Somewhere between 11 to 12 years.
Wow. See, wow. You know what? This is what I like doing about this. It's behind the scenes stuff where oftentimes you hear a successful professional, top executive, what have you, and you just think, oh, wow, they just went right up. You know, like Mark Zuckerberg is uncommon, where you get right out of college or you even finish college, whatever, and all of a sudden super successful his whole career. But you don't really hear stories like this, like 12 years in the desert, figuring out what to do. What do we want to do? Building stuff. Nothing's really going. You're not selling anything. And how did you have the fortitude then to keep going on and not just give up and say, you know what? It's 5 years, 10 years. Like, all right, let me try something else.
Fun. We were having fun.
Simple as that.
Simple as that. Like we would build a new product. Mm-hmm. Maybe every year, sometimes less. In that, you know, some completely different use cases, different profiles. And we were having fun. And it was amazing. We'd learn new technologies, meet new people, you know, just pure hacking away stuff, sometimes over weekends, putting stuff together. And that was it. But we also knew that even though we had fun doing them, they were not worth pursuing as a full-time thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a side note, but I believe it's one of the issues that many startups face, which is they have this idea over coffee with a few friends, and they think it's an idea worth putting all your cash reserves into. Well, while actually it's a feature, it's not a company, and so all of a sudden you're pursuing something, putting a lot of money into it. There's really no market for it. And so we had a strong realization of, we wanted to build a great company, a big company, a good company. But a great company is only built on top of a great business. And so we could actually raise any money we wanted, but if we did not have, you know, a great business, we would just burn through it very fast. So that is the sort of the drive for us to spend so many years. Of course, we have a great relationship as friends, and that helps fundamentally. But behind the scenes, that's about it. And until we found remote as the one thing, the idea that was worth it all. Mm-hmm. All your effort behind, to focus all your energy and and life behind it, was it?
No, while you were working on different projects, did you have like a regular job at the time? You a job? Okay, so you did have some money coming in. So you had the luxury of saying, okay, I'll get some money in so we could still tinker and keep trying. But you didn't want to just roll something out. You really wanted to wait till you had that aha moment where like, okay, this is not a feature. This is something that could be big. This could be something that was huge. And it was worth waiting 10, 12 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Gotcha. Absolutely. We had regular jobby jobs. And so we would often just, you know, burn the midnight oil, working on stuff, building things, because we were having fun. And that was essentially it. When we started remote, was a dad. Mm-hmm. I was becoming a dad. My wife was pregnant, 6 months pregnant. And so it was, you should, those decisions are not easy to make when all of a sudden you're going to say, now I'm going to start making money to support my family and start a business that I'm not sure is going to go anywhere. And we all can end up bankrupt. So that's the reason behind, you know, being, and I think it's also what separates often good investments from bad investments, even from a personal standpoint, right? Because not everything is a company. It could be a good idea, but it doesn't mean that a good idea is worth money.
Now, I'm curious, did your background first in academia and consulting work help you identify what had market potential, what could be a business? Because, you know, to go from a passion to being able to kind of identify what could be its own startup and then eventually a company and eventually a multi-generation business is quite challenging. And not everyone has that skill or that, you know, ability to see that far ahead. You know, how are you able to do it? Because, you know,
that's a great question, today, right? It is, right?
Fast forward today, it seems obvious, right? Like great valuation, great market, thousands and thousands of clients. But I'm sure 10, 12 years ago, it probably wasn't that obvious.
No, it to be honest, it was. So,
wow.
without looking too, trying to look not very, obnoxious here, but
you could be obnoxious. It's okay.
In 2012, when we first started to have discussions about what we could build together, our premise was that when you're looking for a job, and when a company is looking for a candidate for a job, I would say that 99%. The company is not finding the best person for the role, and the person is not finding the best job they could find. So this is exactly what started our first, you know, very scrappy idea of a job board. That was it. What we had in mind was finding meaningful opportunities for people and finding, you know, great talent for businesses across the world. And the premise, actually, as funny as it is, still holds. The biggest problem, but of course you have, you know, you have LinkedIn and you have other job boards that, you know, are massive, but they fail to capture the essence of what it is, a global market. You know, you could have a company in whatever country, and if you're looking to hire locally, even if we're talking about the highest populated cities and countries in the world, your talent pool is maybe 1%, if it's a high population city, of the whole world. And so your talent pool is by definition, even if you're the, you know, the most populated country, city in the world, it's by definition reduced. So your odds at one finding the best job in the world or finding the best candidate in the world are reduced to 1% of the global opportunity pool. And so when you think about this, and we're talking the biggest country, cities and countries, when you're talking about the average, it's probably like 0.1% or something. And this is the harsh reality that we came to solve. You know, then fast forward shit ton of years. And that's it. That's it. You know, today companies, many companies are by default global. Mm-hmm. When you start business, honestly, you don't really care who's going to pay for your product or service. As long as they're happy, they give you the money you're asking for. And that's awesome. Same with building a company. In most cases, you don't really depend on, you know, a physical presence. Of course, some do. If you have, you know, behind the counter operations or, you know, a warehouse, some physical interaction of some sort. Yes, of course. But even so, you many businesses do have, you know, a front physical front desk, but then a lot of people that don't need to be in an office to be efficient and to make the business working well. And that's what made it also successful. See, because we tapped, it's not like we can say, like we're going to say that, no, we found the 1% and we got through. No, we went through the 99%. That was literally it.
You know, it makes a lot of sense.
Now your business by its nature is necessarily global first, distributed first. You know, we have some aspiring startup entrepreneurs, founders in our audience. And oftentimes they think about, oh gosh, like which market should I actually work in? And they instinctively think of a developed country like the US because, you know, oh, it's such a rich country. It's such a huge market. And then they kind of struggle and figure out, oh gosh, like my business is doing well. My startup has made some traction. How do I scale this into something that's global? So with your expertise kind of from the other way around and working and helping so many companies do this very exact thing, can you share this like insight or this kind of insider's tip into knowing when it's the right time to kind of bring your startup or bring your company to that international level, whether it's that new market or that hiring job market that's out there? And how do you navigate that?
When we started remote, we didn't know that it was going to be, you know, a big company, an evolving company across the world. Just
really
two dudes. That was it, right? It could end the next day or next month, whatever that was. We never went to the US to build this company. Actually, we first 3 years of the existence of the company never left Portugal. Also the pandemic and whatnot. And so even through that, we built a distributed company. Today, we still don't have a single office in the world. We're 1,100 people across the world. We never had an office. So if we're able to do that, that means anyone can. Anyone can build a global business from day one. It's about doing the right things, the documentation, understanding that different time zones exist, that the asynchronous side of work exists and can be very productive too, but it requires you to document, to communicate properly, to set the right expectations, and also to understand what is exactly that you want to achieve at the end of the day and with your business too. That is the most important thing. Now, if you're building it from the US, from Portugal, from the Netherlands, from, I don't know, often in many cases does not matter unless you have a physical reason, unless you need to be close to a certain kind of businesses or industry to sell to them. It of course helps if you have a close network of entrepreneurs, of investors, but you don't need to be there. In our case, we raised several rounds of investment. They never met our investors. Only this year, I actually met the board members of remote physically meeting them. And it's been almost 5 years. So that means you can actually build a big company globally distributed. And it's not about, you know, a safe pass that I got from somewhere for someone. No, it's because we did the things that made sense to our business. And often there's this illusion that if you're close to a certain centers of population, that you'll be more like more successful. There's no data to back that up. Now, there is something to be said about networking forces and what that does for your business. Maybe it can be a catalyst for certain things. Absolutely. But it's not a prerequisite. It's not a fundamental requirement for success. Because if you're building a proper business in a company as well, you can probably do it from anywhere. And then also the downside of being in certain population centers is that it's very expensive. Money comes in and money goes out. And so you often can have the best of both worlds. If you travel, if you have a balance where you live and you travel every once in a while, if that makes sense to you as well.
Gosh, I mean, I can see why the company has been so successful, right? Because you've been able to paint this like pretty empowering vision and mission for the company, right? That it's beyond the complexity of just paying people and paying people on time and doing it, you know, legally in the right way. But it's almost a mission of like economic empowerment, right? Where you're actually freeing people to do higher level things and the things that they actually want to do. So, I think that might be, not to put too fine a point on it, but it might be the key to the success, right? For this wannabe or soon to be startup founders listing, you know, it's not too challenging, what I'm hearing, to take on something that just sounds so big or sounds so complex, or I mean, I don't want to tease you, but sounds too boring, right? Just like HR and doing it on a global scale sounds like a big yuck for some people, but you dove right into it. And perhaps that's part of the magic there.
Absolutely. Look, you're giving people back not just money, but time.
Right.
Commute, the amount of hours that people spend commute per week at the end of the year amounts to almost a month of time off, right? It is a lot of time that we're just wasting. So you're giving all this time back to people and also the opportunity to make a lot more money. But of course, these matters, if you talk about, you know, payroll, if you talk about paying freelancers, contractors across the world, wiring money, you know, registering time off, I don't know, understanding who's your line manager and how do you document, you know, feedback and performance. Yeah, it's not rocket science. Absolutely not. But because there is no good solution for it and because it's painful, that's why we're able to build a good product. And so you're able to fix several different things at the same time. You fix a business area with the best product you can possibly have in it. And at the same time, you build a very solid business. And so, because it's hard and people often are, you know, you will pay the hardest, you know, the worse the pain, the more you'll pay to get it fixed. That's the logic behind it.
Yeah, talk about pricing power with HR then. No, I'm curious because you have this great global perspective across industries, certainly across, you know, nations and regions and geographies. You know, we see a lot of companies push their employees to return back to the office to really focus on like on-premise work for at least, you know, a few days of the week. Is that going to be the new trend going forward? Or is that specific to certain industries or even, you know, is it just maybe a certain country phenomenon? Like, do you have an understanding there of what is going on behind all of these kind of it almost seems like Domino's decisions, right? Where one company announces something and, you know, other companies follow along.
This is part of an industry revolution in a way, right? When we went through the pandemic, every company was forced to go into exile, remote work. Most companies up until that point would say, we don't believe in remote work. If you want to stay working from home today, sure, but I don't really trust that you're doing much. There was a lot of distrust. And then throughout the pandemic, a lot of companies realized, well, actually, we can operate in this function. And the third hit was, wait, but this actually requires some processes, documentation that we don't have in place because we're not that well organized or because we never took the time to document it. It was just, you know, word of mouth, you pass by someone in the hall. They're like, oh, how do I access this program? Oh, you go there and you click this. And you never take the time to document it. So you're faced with a decision. Either you reap the benefits of remote work and you have to put in place the discipline, the documentation, the processes to maintain productivity and sometimes even increase it, or not. Or you depend on a physical place to conduct your business. The only determining factor for why companies go back to an office or not is because of their leaders. There's nothing else. Nothing else. In several cases, there are very expensive leases going on. Sometimes there's this, sort of confusion between what is culture and what is an office. An office is not culture and vice versa. A culture is how you conduct your business, how do you go about your day-to-day job, and how do you turn, human brain power into money. That's what culture in an office, that culture in a company is. An office is where you do this work. For some companies, they try to, they decide that actually some leaders decide that they need that to function at their best, right? That they either don't have a conducive environment at home, that they feel the need to have people around them. And for some people, that's perfect. That's awesome. Now, but what with the proof that we got is that it is doable to build a business in whichever form you choose to. And there's no predetermined factor of success that's going to say you're going to fail or not based on how you build your business. And then, a lot of companies were concerned because people didn't want to go back to an office. And they were not forcing people back to an office until then. You see a couple of very prominent media present people that were like, no, we have an office. You work in an office because, in fact, it's easy for that person to manage that business in that way. This usually comes from poorly structured operations, but if it works, it works, and that's fine. Whatever works for these people. And so they start to push people back into an office and say, you have to come back or you're fired. And some people went back, and other companies were met with such a force where leaders were like, okay, so we can actually do whatever works as long as you come to the office a few days, because we still want to maintain a physical place. From our perspective, neither of these, three options is right or wrong.
Huh.
You have businesses that are office bound that are employing people across the world with us. Companies that are fully remote that never leave the same country because they don't need to. Everyone is working from their house. So the reality is the same, just with different perspectives, and there's space for literally everyone. Well, a lot of different learnings and different beliefs too, but at the end of the day, it's just another way of working, and it's doable. But companies realize that they can't force people because people now have other options and can just pick to work for, you know, I end up this call right after I can have a call with someone and apply for another job. There's nothing stopping me for doing that. And the reality makes it very fair for both sides.
You know, what you said just makes a lot of sense, right? Because it seems like the current narrative is, oh, it's almost this big tug of war between people that are going to, you know, embrace this newfound future of remote and distributed work versus kind of these like so-called boomers that just want to kind of look over your shoulder and make sure you're on premise. And it's almost become a debate, but really what you're kind of enlightening is it actually has to look down to what your company is trying to do, right? What are your objectives? What are your resources that you have? You know, if you find it challenging to work remotely, perhaps it's a chance to look internally and say, oh gosh, like it's likely because of the processes or the current realities of how I run my business that's led me or almost forced me into making that decision rather than, oh, wow, I can actually take this as an opportunity to build that infrastructure perhaps, or maybe just take the easy way out and hire Marcelo's team, right, to do it for you and unlock that potential, right, and give you that optionality to kind of, again, empower you to do something else.
Absolutely.
Wow. That makes a lot of sense. I think that is a kind of good kind of paradigm shift for a lot of people in terms of how they see work and certainly whether that's the future of work or even the day-to-day from here on out. I really appreciate these insights, Marcelo. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.